Hello, everybody. This is Keith Pennell, and welcome back to another Science Studio program. This week, I'm on location. Actually, I'm almost on vacation. I'm down in Roatan, Honduras. That's a little island. I think it's about 40 miles off the coast of Honduras, and it's renowned around the world for its corals, and also for something that is called the Roatan Institute of Marine Sciences. And we're going to be talking today about this institute, about Roatan, about corals, about education, about research associated with marine biology and marine science. And we'll be talking to Jennifer Keck. She is the coordinator for education and research of the institute. And Jennifer, welcome to Science Studio.
Thanks for having me.
Before we start, why is it here? Why is there an Institute of Marine Science, etc. at Roatan?
Well, the Institute for Marine Sciences, or what we call RIMS, was founded in 1989. It's a private marine science facility, and it is owned by the owners of Anthony's Key Resort. And this resort's been around for over 45 years, and it's well-established and well-known in the diving community. But the owner is a local gentleman. His name is Julio Galindo, and he realized many years ago that his livelihood depended on that reef offshore, and he wanted to make sure that it was preserved and protected. And so in 1989, he basically established the first facility of its kind in the Bay Islands and even in Honduras, which was a center dedicated to education and research. So, you know, as soon as we opened our doors, we started to get interest from the international community, people wanting to come down and utilize our facility for education programs, and we've just kind of grown and gone with it since then.
How did Jennifer arrive here?
I arrived here by a bit of luck. I spent about 8 months traveling after I graduated from university with a degree in marine science, and I spent those 8 months...
Where did you study?
University of Santa Barbara.
California,
Santa Barbara.
Lovely place.
Very lovely place.
Exactly. Difficult to leave.
It is. Most students are on the 5 or 6 year plan there for good reason. But I managed to get through in 4 years, and I decided to celebrate by traveling, and I came down to Central and South America and spent 8 months here, and that was my first exposure to the Bay Islands. I fell in love with this area, and came back from traveling, had a few jobs here and there, and then found out about this job opening for the education and research coordinator, and I applied for it and narrowed down to a few people. They sent me down here for an interview, and the rest is history. That was 18 years ago.
The prerequisites for a position like that? You have to be a scuba diver, I presume.
Have to be a scuba diver, have to have a background in marine science and education. One of the jobs that I had when I got back from Santa Barbara was I worked in the Florida Keys at a marine science facility teaching shorter programs to younger kids. So I'd worked there for about 2 years. So I had the education background, I had the degree in marine science.
Now you've got the job.
And now I've got the dream job, right. Absolutely. I think one of the other reasons why I was well-suited for this job is because my father was in the Army and we moved around my whole life. So it was very easy for me to just pick up, pack up, and say goodbye to friends and family and come down here. And
in my years of teaching in North America, I've always noticed that the Army brats, or the military brats, as they call themselves, you know, tend to be much more self-driven. They have no problems with new occasions arising, you know, risk-taking. They're just more mature in many, many ways. But anyway, let's get back to the Roatan Institute. First of all, let's just talk about the corals, because you mentioned at the beginning it's the reef that Señor Galindo thought was worth preserving. Tell us what corals are, because not everybody out there knows what a coral is.
Corals are invertebrates. They're a very simple invertebrate. They belong to the phylum Cnidaria, so if you know your taxonomy.
I'm afraid not.
They have the ability to pull calcium out of the seawater and build these amazing reef structures, which are home to an incredible diversity of life. And we're very blessed here in Roatan to be surrounded by over 60 miles of fringing and barrier reef. And the reef that makes up the Bay Islands is just a small part of a much larger reef system. We're the southernmost part of the Mesoamerican Barrier Reef, which is the second largest barrier reef in the world after the Great Barrier Reef in Australia.
Where does that actually go? If this is the bottom part, I guess.
The Mesoamerican Barrier Reef starts in Mexico, in the Yucatan Peninsula, and then Mexico, Belize, Guatemala, and Honduras all share the same reef and its resources.
And do they have joint programs to protect the reef? Or
there is a joint program that, you know, all the countries work together to set up kind of marine protected areas, corridors for protecting marine diversity. So there is some joint collaboration between all the countries. They realize that it's a very important resource. What happens in the south can affect the health of the reef in the northern region. So it's all connected.
You would have to sort of never read a newspaper, never look at a magazine, never listen to the news, without most people who are listening to this program will recognize that the coral reefs, in a sense, are like the canary in the mine. This is what people state anyway, that the health of the coral reefs is indicative of the health of the world. What are the threats to it? What have you seen in your almost 20 years here?
Unfortunately, coral reefs around the world are under a lot of stress, and that these stresses have increased in magnitude and severity, and also in the numbers of stresses now. You know, our reefs have certainly changed since I've been here in 18 years. Most of the stress that our reefs deal with here are stresses brought on by human activities. But we have hurricanes and other natural stresses as well. But the problem with reefs now is that you're seeing stress upon stress upon stress acting on these reefs. And it's sort of like the straw that breaks the camel's back. You know, corals are pretty resilient organisms, and coral reefs are pretty hardy ecosystems. But when you have these stresses on top of one another, then eventually something's going to give. And unfortunately, we're seeing degradation around the world with coral reefs.
Is that degradation actually all around the world, or are there certain places where you can say, for reasons that may not be known, but boy, it's really flourishing there, or they're coming back from a pressure?
There's certainly some places left in the world that are considered to be pretty pristine, but unfortunately some of the best examples of reef degradation are occurring here in the Caribbean.
Different pressures. I mean, the pressure of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got to say, I was told, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that almost 1 million people a year come to visit this little island.
Absolutely. It's a small island, only 49 square miles. But
right. Thanks
to improved infrastructure, we've got two cruise ship ports. We have, an international airport. So on a busy day, we can have three cruise ships here. And, people coming from the U.S. and Europe.
And then people like me bringing research teams down,
yes.
And we'll come to that later. So are we killing the goose that laid the golden egg?
There's certainly a pressure when you start seeing more and more people coming and using a finite resource. And, you know, we are a small island. We're only 49 square miles. And when you've got 1 million people coming to this island a year, they're all visiting the same areas, and there is going to be a stress, and we want to make sure that the tourism that we see here is sustainable, because it is a very, very important part of the island. Many people derive some or all of their income from reef-related and tourist-related activities.
Well, I presume. So
we benefit absolutely
right. From
the tourists, but we also pay a price as well, because it is an impact on the resources. So we have to really manage the resources, and that's really the important thing, and is to create protected areas, to have rules and regulations, to try and mitigate and minimize the kind of damage that, you know, having a massive amount of people coming into a small area can cause.
So you've got a very important facility. Right, it's in a slightly endangered, and presumably even global warming has some impact.
Mm-hmm.
Just give us the range of features that corals really need to be healthy, temperature-wise, pH-wise. I mean, I remember doing a program many years ago from the Biosphere in Tucson, mm-hmm. where they were studying corals
right. Within
there and doing experiments on varying pH and things like that. Are these features which are important, or is just the warming of the planet a much more insidious problem for the coral?
Corals definitely have a temperature requirement, and what we're seeing with climate change and global warming is that the waters in the tropics are reaching a higher levels, and you know, corals are finding themselves at the upper limits of their thermal threshold, and all it takes is, you know, just 1 degree above their thermal requirements, and they're going to be stressed, and we may see coral bleaching, which is a response to corals to a variety of stresses, but thermal stress is among the leading causes of bleaching.
But that has a sort of a slight positive, in the sense that you can imagine that they, just like plants and birds, are migrating from where they used to be to different regions. Are we seeing evidence for corals stretching up and reefs that didn't have corals up in the more temperate areas all of a sudden being able to be good sources of coral growth?
Well, the problem is that, you know, corals grow extremely
slowly. Yeah, right.
They grow maybe, you know, a couple millimeters, a couple centimeters a year. And the rate at which, you know, our climate's changing, is corals aren't...
They can't keep up.
So are we seeing a move a little bit? May we see more? Yeah, but...
It's just not quick enough process, because I remember I just come back from going home to England. I come from the southeast, mm-hmm. and there's a county called Sussex. And this global warming is impacting the champagne producers mm-hmm. of France. And so they're buying land up in England, which is always a little cooler, mm-hmm. Because now the temperature change is making that area of England just perfect for
right.
growing the grape for champagne. But that's every year,
right?
Not 2 centimeters a
right.
year.
So corals need a certain temperature requirement. They need clear water. They need water that sunlight can penetrate. So that means that sediment and nutrients coming from land-based activities are major stresses for corals, and they can promote algal growth. They need a constant salinity as well. So these are some of the major requirements that corals need to be in a healthy environment. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, we have a lot of... sources of pollution in our ocean, you know, via sedimentation and nutrients being introduced.
Well, and presume cruise ships alone must bring an awful lot of extra, other than just passengers
exactly,
and tourists.
Exactly, yes.
Tell us a little bit then about the educational aspects of the Institute. How do you go about proselytizing and bringing groups in, and what do you do when they're here?
So the Institute for Marine Sciences is dedicated to education and research. We work with about 30 university groups a year, between 25 and 30 university groups a year. Some of the new groups that have started visiting us have found us online. We have a great website, but we've got long-lasting relationships with a lot of the universities that have been coming down here for now 20 years.
Quite a long history, then.
It is,
of
yes.
interacting, and that's your job. Mm-hmm. In a sense, just to go with the outreach
absolutely.
For both the education, where you take presumably high school groups from time to time also?
We do have a few high school groups that we work with. We do have college groups. They stay 1 to 3 weeks. The college groups usually get credit through their university for coming down here. It can be anywhere from, you know, 1 to 4 credit hours, depending on how intense the curriculum is.
Didn't do that when I was in college.
Absolutely. And I think that more and more universities are trying to offer these experiential learning and field courses to...
Well, this is like a year abroad, except
absolutely
compacted into 3 weeks.
Into 3 weeks.
You're listening to Science Studio. My name is Keith Pannell. I'm down here in Roatan, Honduras, talking to Jennifer Keck. She is the Coordinator for Education and Research at the Roatan Institute of Marine Sciences. We'll be back in one moment. Welcome back to Science Studio, Keith Pannell, along with Jennifer Keck. We're here in Roatan, Honduras, at the Institute of Marine Sciences, and we're talking about the educational aspects, we're talking about corals, but part of Jennifer's brief, if you like, is education and research. So let's just talk a little bit about what are the sort of research areas that you yourself are particularly interested in and have managed to sort of proselytize to some of these universities that you deal with.
You know, when I took this job on, part of my job was to take over a long-term monitoring project that was established a few years before I got here. And we basically set up a monitoring program that enables us to look at how the reef has been and is changing over time. So we're looking at growth and recruitment and mortality of the corals and sponges and other life forms that are out on the reef. And we've got over 20 years of data now on what's happening to our reefs. And, you know, there has been a change. There's been some big events that's happened since I've been here. We've had a hurricane pass through. We've had a couple bleaching events, one quite a severe one.
Just tell us what you mean by bleaching event. I mean, we know that bleaching means color goes. And
right.
Presumably that means that the corals
are stressed,
bright, and now they're white.
Right. So when a coral bleaches, it is a stress response. In the bleaching that we've experienced here has been temperature related. So the water temperatures have increased to a stressful level, and the corals expel a algae that lives in their tissue, and the algae provides coral with the majority of their energy needs, their nutrients in the form of sugars, but they also provide corals with most of their pigmentation and coloration. So when the algae are expelled...
Oh, so it's the algae that live within the coral,
yes,
that gives rise to the color, because yes, the coral itself is basically, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, calcium carbonate.
It's calcium carbonate with a thin veneer of
right.
living tissue on
yes.
top that tends to be transparent. So when the corals expel the zooxanthellae, they're left in a stressed state. They've lost the major source of their food and energy, and they also lose their color. So they appear to be bleached because you can see through their transparent tissues to the calcium carbonate skeleton that they create.
So this invertebrate animal, this coral,
yes,
they can sort of go dormant for long periods of time in between, you know, so you say bleaching, which means they're not getting a lot of food because their all algae have been expelled, but can they be dormant? Can they just suffer this for a year, 2 years, or?
No, they don't remain dormant. They basically remain in a stress state. They're not getting their energy needs, and what that means is they're not going to be able to contribute to growth and recruitment. They're basically just going to be surviving, and they can survive for short periods of time, but if that stress persists, then they will most likely succumb to disease and mortality.
What do you define as a short period of time? Are we talking months or a year or
Some of the corals here that have bleached have survived several months, and then they begin to recover.
Oh.
With the corals here, we had a warming event, and the warming event lasted for a few days, and that caused the corals to bleach. But the full recovery of those corals took several months for them to regain their algal populations back.
Can you feed corals? When they've been bleached and the algae food source and energy source is gone, can you just scatter something on them? Miracle Grow?
Well, you can grow them in aquariums, and you
okay.
do feed them in aquariums.
But out there in real life, I mean, is that a stupid idea?
You're going to need lots and lots of lots of people and divers and food, and it would be a very
okay,
very labor intensive and.
Well, the other thing, I remember reading an article in the New Yorker, and I think the lady involved was Gates. She was an English woman that landed up in Hawaii with one of the little islands where they do a lot of coral research. And they were talking about genetically modifying coral so that they could exist at higher temperatures and things like that. Are you familiar with that? And you know, does that have any opportunity for the future, genetically modified coral?
I'm not so familiar with genetic modification, but I know that what we're starting to do and what a lot of other places are starting to do is look at the corals that are less likely to bleach. Some corals are going to be more hardy and more resilient than others. And what you're starting to see is when it comes to reef protection and conservation is active restoration. So helping to bring reefs to their more natural state. And so we here at RIMS have started a coral nursery program. There's probably about 30 different sites throughout the Caribbean in which these coral nurseries have started. And what we're doing is we're taking coral fragments, We call them fragments of opportunity because we're just using corals that have broken off from storms or from natural activities out on the reef.
So it's like a rescue dog process.
Exactly.
Rescue coral business.
And we're reattaching these fragments onto the method we're using here is a suspended tree. So it's made out of PVC. We have branches that come off of it. So we attach these little coral fragments to the branches. And they're elevated from the seafloor, so they don't have to deal with predation. They don't have to deal with the sediment issues that some of the corals are facing. You know,
and you keep the tourists
on the substrate. Right now, the tourists are being kept away. But we have two trees set up. We have 200 coral fragments on them, and they're doing really well. And by growing these coral fragments, if a bleaching event comes up in the future, maybe some of those fragments will survive and some of them might not. And so what we would be most interested in is starting to fragment the corals that are surviving, grow more of those, and
right.
put those back out on the reef and hopefully build a better and more resilient reef with corals that
right.
are more resilient.
So, I mean, the issue there, of course, is you're going to be decreasing diversity. Right, simply because the survivors are the survivors and the rest will
right.
not be able to cope with those changing environmental conditions. But this is an interesting experiment. How long have you been doing this?
We just started this year. We had a workshop at the beginning of 2016, and so this is a pilot project, but we're hoping to have a couple more nursery sites. There is another organization, the Coral Restoration Foundation, that's also set up some nurseries on the island, and we work with the Roatan Marine Park, the Bay Islands Conservation Association, and some other governmental conservation organizations. So it is a joint project between a lot of different organizations. And just to get back, species of corals have different genotypes. So the coral that we're working with right now is Acroporus cervicornis, or staghorn coral, which has really been decimated throughout the Caribbean because of disease primarily. And the populations now are just a small fraction of what they used to be, but they're very important corals, and they are doing really well in these nursery programs. But there are different genotypes, and so you may find four or five different genotypes within this species that are more resilient than others. So I don't think necessarily we're decreasing diversity out on the reef. We're just looking for the genotypes within these species that are more resilient and try and raise more of them for transplantation.
I would imagine that this is not just happening in Roatan, but there must be a worldwide movement.
There is a worldwide movement.
In fact, do you belong to a group where you can exchange ideas and results?
Absolutely. This is becoming, I think, marine conservation managers are realizing that it can't just be about protecting the resources and the reef at the state it's at. Let's help the reef get it back to its more natural state. And so this active type of restoration is becoming more and more recognized, I think. And so there's over 30 different nursery programs just in the Caribbean alone.
Right, yeah.
So many other islands.
If you look for the most successful, how long have they been going? And how substantial is the coral that they
put on
their
trees?
Well,
one of the great things about working with staghorn coral or Acroporus cervicornis, it was a major frame-building coral in the Caribbean for many, many years. It's a branching coral, and it creates these dense thickets or stands, and the network of branches creates a lot of refuge for small juvenile fish and invertebrates. So it's a very, very important coral out in the reef. It basically adds to the three-dimensional complexity. It provides a nursery ground. This coral also happens to reproduce by fragmentation. So it is a more fragile coral. Wind pieces break off by storms. They will quickly cement to the reef if they're in a suitable spot and grow into a new colony. And that's why this coral is doing so well with these nursery programs, is because by fragmenting them, they're finding that they actually stimulates growth. And so we've started this in March. We established our first tree. Our second tree was established a few months later. But the corals that we've put on the first tree have already doubled in size. And they, from the literature, By the end of the first year, the corals should be at a size that we can begin then to fragment off of them. So we won't have to go out and collect corals anymore in the wild. We'll have these populations of corals that we can just clip from and then keep the mother colony on the tree, but bring the branches and fragments out.
I mean, that sounds, to me, extremely exciting.
Right.
I mean,
it is exciting, and it's you feel like you're doing something.
You're doing all that you can.
Absolutely.
Anyway, right.
Just a little bit more.
Well, this is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You love your job.
I do. I'm very lucky. I wake up every morning and look out onto the reef, and that's my office. And
is there one part of the reef that you apart from the your nursery, that you don't take people to because it's just so beautiful, and it's rather like those caves in France where you don't want people going down to see the cave drawings? You know, you just leave that alone. It's too beautiful.
There is a site on the south side of the island. It's an area called Smith Bank and Cordelia Shoal. And it's a site that's hard to get to because the south side of the island is the windward side. So it's usually much rougher. And the fact that this area, it's a shallow shoal about a mile offshore, it's just never been dived by recreational divers. And about 12 years ago, one of my student groups came down and the professor accessed some satellite imagery of the island. And I hadn't known about these areas over there. Fishermen have been going there for years. But he brought down this image and he said, "What is that over there? It looks shallow. It looks diveable. Can we go?" And I said, "Hey, if we get a break in the weather, let's go explore and check it out." And we got over there and we jumped in and we went down to about 70 feet. And we didn't see anything particularly striking or different from the reef that we dive closer to shore. But as we came up into the shallows at the end of the dive, what we saw just caused our regulators to fall out of our mouth. We were just in absolute awe. It was an area that encompasses acres and acres of just 100% staghorn, the coral I just talked about, finger coral and lettuce coral, for just as far as you could see. There's no place like this in the Caribbean. We had Sylvia Earle come down here several years ago on an expedition, and we took her out there. Sylvia Earle is basically a hero in the underwater world. She's a tireless champion of marine ecosystems, and she was blown away. She said, "This is the healthiest reef I've seen in the Caribbean in over 30 years." She pledged her help. She said, "Whatever I can do to help make this a protected area, it needs to be protected. This is a vital, vital area." And she made a video, and we were able to present the video to the president of Honduras at that time. And her words and on the campaigning of a lot of other people who care about this site, we finally got it recognized as a marine protected area of very high importance, and it now has the protection that it needs.
What does that mean? We've just got a couple
what
of
that
minutes
means,
left. Yes.
What that means is that it is going to have limited ability for visitation. The only people that will be able to go there, it will be closed to fishermen, will be closed to recreational divers. Research divers will be able to go out there. There'll be markings and to make sure that the shipping lane, it stays out of the way of the shipping lane.
So really, this is
as much as I want to take people to see I don't, because I don't want anything
back
to happen. I go there with the student groups. We're able to go out there, and it is an amazing. It's a jewel and a gem, and I go out there. Whenever I go out there, I come up like a kid in a candy store. It's just a beautiful place and reminds me why I'm here.
Absolutely. And that's a great, nice, positive note to finish on, the nursery. And then this one protected area down there. I mean, so we're not to the point where there's an irreversible loss. I mean, there are things that we can do. They may not be on the time scale that we're normally associated with, but people are paying attention.
People are paying attention.
Absolutely.
People are paying attention, and I think that technology is growing at an exponential rate.
Oh.
So I feel like there will be solutions and answers that can help.
And you heard that from Jennifer Keck. She's the coordinator of education and research at the Roatan Institute of Marine Sciences. Jennifer, it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you
so much for being here on Science Studio. And maybe I'll come back next year with another group of students. And by then,
young marine biologists, please.
Absolutely.
We need more of them. Our oceans and our reefs need more.
Yeah, I'm still scared of being under the water. Anyway, thank you, Norma Martinez, for putting this program together. We'll be back next week with a totally different program. Bye-bye.